Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Angela.
This is Books,
Books Are Good, Actually.
And today we are talking about our July book, Settlers, Mythology of the White Proletariat, from Made Fun of Modern Jay Sakai. I am not, this is going to be the podcast where I'm going to fuck up saying bourgeoisie and proletariat. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Proletariat.
The proles. Whatever.
Correct.
Anyway.
Okay. Thanks for reminding me about that.
Oh, my.
Okay. Continue.
Oh, okay. So we read the fourth edition, the one that came out in 20 of Settlers. This book was made or first published, I think.
83.
Yeah. And I think People's History, which I'm bringing that up because we're going to talk about some things from that. I think it came out, I feel like, a little bit after that. Maybe it was like...
Let's find out. To the internet.
You would think that we should do before the show starts, but I'm like, nah. Oh, originally published 1980. So that's right. Oh,
beat it by 3 years.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's not a fair comparison to make. Zinn has settler privileges.
We'll get to that. So anyway, I'll start with general impression. So general impressions of this book is part of it. We've been in a lot of labor book, like history books, for probably the past like month or so. Last year was like quite a bit of it. So a lot of it was old hat.
So actually, technically, you are absolutely correct that we have been dealing with labor history for a month or so, because we've been reading Settlers this month.
Oh my god. Anyway, we've been doing a lot of stuff about unions, specifically Black unions, a lot of communist history, especially communism in the United States. And so this wasn't like mind-blown. Overall, I felt like towards the back half of the book, I know this is not a view podcast, but the back half when he gets to temperate, like the 70s and 80s, was, I felt kind of soppy. And yeah. The numbers I was getting for like, oh, these people are managers. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, there's a lot of managers. I'm like, yes, there are a lot of just random ass jobs that people do. But like, what's the point? Anyway, thought that was interesting. I thought it was a little bit dismissive of poor whites, because I thought that even though, yeah, there's poor whites, they're still getting fucked over, just in equal measure. But it's a different type of fucked over than that. Yeah, they have white privilege, but at the end of the day, other white people who have money do not think of them as equals. So, yes. Like, there's that. I thought the coverage of the Communist Party USA was interesting and kind of relevant still, because the current CPUSA, some people think, are infiltrated by feds, which when you're hanging out with what's that fucking fascist we talk about? Oh, shit. I forgot. Dugin. Yeah.
Dugin.
He got invited to like one of their things. I'm like, yeah, okay. This
really?
Is, yeah.
What the fuck?
It was not great. And maybe that's what I recalled. I'll go double check before I start spreading that. But I just was like,
I mean, if it's true, like it's an obvious critique of like critical support. It's like, oh, yeah. you're against American imperialism. We're against American imperialism. Why don't you come over and do a little panel with us? What's your most recent book about? Oh, Russian imperialism?
Yeah.
Anyway, fun panel.
Yeah, so, you know, it's weird.
It's probably, yeah. I can totally see them not being infiltrated and just being dumb. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't have all the answers, but, like, I don't know how you're a part of the, unless it's just, like a Russia mania or USSR mania that allows them to gloss over that. I don't know. We should do a deep dive into instead of reading a book for a month, maybe this is after podcast discussion that we're about to have, but maybe after doing some books, we just spend a month just digging into spats and just researching spats.
Yeah, that's probably... All right, I am going to walk back my Dugan thing. I think they debated some shit, which is still not great.
Platform's platform.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Now I recall. I remember they brought him on to just as poorly, I think.
Yep. Because
people think debate until they get to it, and they're like, oh, fuck, I cannot. And then they get, you know, beat the fuck out.
And also, like, a debate is very rarely ever about changing.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think overall the book is interesting, but we'll actually discuss of it, which is there such a thing as a white proles? I can't fucking pronounce that goddamn word for the life of me. We'll discuss that a bit later. Let's see. I think my one kind of criticism is that I think it like goes through certain aspects a bit quickly towards the end, like the 50s and the 60s. I think his evidence for his thesis is sometimes shaky, but maybe the good in people, but I don't know. But that's mainly
for sure. So I get that as a criticism. At the same time, though, like being able to do analysis of like the past 30 years, even say today, is pretty difficult given the, and this is with the amount of information we have access to and the availability of that information. This is something that we also felt did a poor job with.
Sure.
Which was everything after World War II. He really raced through, and there was definitely a lot that could have been covered better and deeper for both books. So I think it's more just a product of not having the appropriate space, the appropriate tools, and also not wanting the book to be 300 more pages.
Yeah.
But it definitely is the weakest part of the book, for sure. So general impressions, most of it rings true for me, even if there are potentially issues with the numbers, or methodology behind the numbers not being exposed. Like you said, given what we've been reading, it's not really, like a shocking thing to be encountering. Like, I know for a fact if I give this book to my father, he will have objections across the board.
Yeah.
But he mostly reads pop science and like books by Google data scientists or books by Steven Pinker, stuff like that. Yeah. Fun fact, I legit called Steven Pinker a pedophile in front of him. Not the last time I saw, but the time before. He was aghast, and I was like, how else do you describe someone who's been on Epstein's plane? Like, not a pedophile?
Fair. I think also seeing stuff. But anyway, about the victims. Yeah. So.
Yes. Yes. I liked it as far as book flow goes. So we both were initially going to read off of the Internet Archive copy, and I downloaded that. I took it with me on a vacation where I had no signal, and I could not get past the initial intro, which you did say it got better about.
Yeah.
So I didn't start this book until like 2 weeks ago. I only read this book in like the past like 8 or 9 days. But it was a very, like, things tended to flow really well together. The arguments, whether you accept whole cloth or want to see the backing for the numbers, the arguments flowed really well together. There were occasionally like jumps in like what was being addressed that felt a little off, like you would be talking about one particular group and then like without like providing context for why the shift was happening. You begin talking about a different group and you get most of the way through the paragraph and you're like, oh, this is how this relates to the last paragraph, which is fine. It's a decision on like how it just an interesting way of presenting it.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It definitely makes me interested in reading other third worldist or Maoist works. It also definitely makes me, I mean, not to say that I didn't previously like have an idea of like the position that like my grandparents and my great grandparents were in, but it recontextualizes the positions of like, oh, they came across as immigrants and they struggled, but then they made their way. And it's like, yes, because society was actively clearing the way for recent European immigrants so that they could reinforce a settler class. It's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
So it's definitely forcing me to like recontextualize the like family myths that exist. Like, not to deny like scrabbling is scrabbling. It's just a question of how hard is the slope.
Yeah. I think also like let's kind of sort of dig into that. This is not on topic of the questions that we do have, but
sure.
I thought it was in that when it came mid to late, there was a lot of talk about, oh, the wages in America were better than the ones in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And if I felt like that kind of hand waved away some other things that were like going on in America in terms of like food, like mm-hmm. food in America during that time had a bunch of additives like sawdust and other shit in it. And it's, and I'm just thinking
like straight up poison.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, so I understand from like you're, if you're coming from Ireland where you're literally being like
starved
to death.
On purpose.
On purpose to go to America where, okay, I have to work these 18-hour days, I get two C's, but at least I can get like a half a bread that's probably rotted. It just, I don't know, it was one of those
needed more context.
Yeah.
It wasn't being directly examined.
Yeah. And this is not to say, and I don't want to be like an apologist or some shit to not be like, oh yeah, blacks during that time totally didn't have like they had it better or whatever. No, they fucking didn't.
They had to deal with the same food issues, but less wages or even no wages.
Yeah, and then also getting lunches and shit. So like,
also that.
Yeah, it's just like it wasn't like, you know, obviously later where okay, these groups of Europeans now they get to be white now because we need to like make sure we don't have riots on our hands is like. You know, yeah, but I don't know. It just, I felt like the evidence for, oh, we're going to compare wages is like, I think kind of ignoring the materialistic like view. Like, okay, yeah, that's great that they got paid more, but like at the end of the day.
What were they buying with that money?
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, I think most of their children still all fucking die. Like majority of them did. You know, like.
And another thing to consider in that period is like, what was going on in Europe? Why were the wages half as much? Oh, there had been 100 years of wars in various locations and various famines through that period and various revolutions through that period. Like things were not like stable in Europe during the 1800s and like late 1700s. So like moving from an unstable system where potentially, if you had organized, you could like enact a revolution over to the United States, where you joined an ever-expanding settler population, where all of the like the release valve for preventing revolution was on top of many other things that are discussed in this book, just pushing west.
Yeah,
like if there ever was a problem of like, well, there's too many people here. There's not enough to go around. You just literally went and stole land in the West, which it does talk about. But I think the fact that the fact that the United States did not have interior turmoil the way Europe did is probably a big part of why those wages were so much higher.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we had our own turmoils, obviously, but not to the same scale.
Yeah, like, it's a... I think that, like, there's just pieces there just missing for the overarching story, like, not story, mm-hmm. sorry, like, narrative of, like, mm-hmm. this. It's very, yeah. Also,
it's focused on what, on the story of us.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
which is fair, because I mean, it works as a 380 page book. If you expand it to 800 pages to explore these things, would it work as well?
Probably not. I mean, I didn't mind people's history, but it got fucking repetitive after a point, which I mean, yeah. I guess that's maybe the point, but like,
yeah,
Christ.
I think Settlers could work as like a multi-volume thing.
Yeah.
And like really show the math and also go into these digressions and further explore all of these things. But we've already read a 2,000-page book for this year. I don't think we're going to read another.
Yeah. I think my one other thing before we go on, I do, maybe I'm super wrong, but I thought a lot of another interesting, I think also needs to bring in context for when these other European immigrants came over, like a lot of the ideas that they had were not really accepted. Besides socialism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of Swedish had were mostly abolition. Maybe I am. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Maybe I'm super wrong. Anyway, I just think it's a bit too generalist to be like, oh yeah, so when the Irish came over and the Germans came over, they had like their own their own accepted ideas and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it does discuss about to a point how like the groups that were initially coming over were not a part of whiteness and not a part of the settler class, which, by the way, listeners, if when you're hearing us talk about the settler class, like it quite literally means like white people who are either directly the recent settlers at the beginning of what was to become the United States or their descendants. So if you can trace your family history back to the 1600s in the United States, you're a settler. Maybe. Because, like, if all of your descendants go back to the 1600s, or significantly enough that you're... Anyway, yes. So that's roughly what a settler is.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. I think the early history part was okay, but it was a lot left to be desired. I still think there was hand waving of like, oh yeah, the folks who got brought over as indentured servants is like, you're just as bad. And I have feelings about that, I guess. Like, obviously they're not chattel slaves, but
yeah.
It's just like, you still were brought over against your fucking will because of some other person.
I think some of them like did purposefully, like, I don't know enough about the indentured servitude system to say like definitively,
right?
But at least the understanding I have from having heard about it in the past is it was a mix of like, your options are go to prison or one of the poorhouses, or go be an indentured servant in the New World.
Yeah.
Or people like willingly choosing to do that.
Yeah, that's
so fair. I don't quite know enough about that. It sounds like we need to find a book.
Sounds like we do. Anyway, by the time we like keep going this podcast, we will just be fucking historian at this point.
Yes. Yeah. You know, should we enroll in a master's degree a history master's?
God, no. I don't want to write any more papers ever.
No. It's fine. We're going to enroll jointly as single individual. The name we enroll under is going to be Bookser. Good, actually.
Okay, nice.
And it's perfect because they have no pre-existing debt. So the United States government will be glad to give them thousands of dollars to go to graduate school, which of course will disappear partially into the, you know, room and board that Booksart has to spend, which in turn we will pocket.
There we go. Oh no, you told me.
Shh, feds, stop listening. So then, after we get the degree jointly, where does Booksart go? Nowhere. They never existed. Their debt disappears.
Oh.
It's free money.
Free money.
All we have to do is commit serious fraud.
Anyway, we're going on to the next topic of interesting knowledge or interesting factoids while reading this book.
I dislike Eugene Debs now. All white labor organizers in the 1800s said or related to people who said or did terrible things.
Yeah.
That whole kill your darlings thing, it comes for the revolutionaries as well.
Yeah. Not great. A lot of the Socialist Party and Communist Party USA were not about that life. When the chips and cards and anything else came down to the table, they were like, we might be caught by the feds and then go buy. Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds like some other things that happen with online leftists.
Is time a flat circle?
Any more factoids that you...
Chinese settlers were present at the founding of Los Angeles in the 1700s early 1800s.
Right.
That during World War II, there was an entire unit of Japanese American soldiers who were sent on a suicide mission to rescue a Texan battalion. And they lost like 90% of their unit in rescuing. Like, they lost more people than they were trying to rescuing these white Texans. It's incredibly frustrating just how much weight American society, both like in America and then like in the structures that exist outside of America, place upon like the value of it. It's like, no. Like, why the fuck would you ever do that? Just, if you're worried about them handing over like information, bomb their location. It's not worth throwing away more lives than you're saving, ever.
Yeah, it's not like we haven't done that before or anything.
Never. Oh, never. This book is filled with tidbits. Another really interesting one was that leading up to the Civil War, the populations in the South in cities were becoming so heavily Black that Black industrial workers, because there was industrial work in the South, it wasn't all plantations, who were living and working in the cities, were so numerous that they were able to like directly like band together and threaten white people just walking out on the street, which is rad as fuck, but then also explains why they were broken up and sent back to plantations.
Yeah.
And this book does a really good job of highlighting how oppressed communities are constantly like moved in to do labor that nobody else wants to do. And as soon as the labor becomes like key enough that it can be organized and like turned into like a form of labor that pays well, white people move in and take all those jobs. And all of those people are then pushed back out. either out to the fringes or out of the country. That's another fun fact. Not so fun. What sort of fun facts did you gain?
So the fact that we almost had a when the New Deal got passed, and then we kind
of... Oh, you didn't know about the Smedley Butler
thing? No, I didn't realize it was like on all of them. I thought Behind the Bastards, and I kind of forgot. But anyway, they attempted the coup. They found the senator or the general. He confessed, and they were like, wow, that's a lot of people. And then they just let them go.
To clarify, he didn't confess in like he got caught. He purposefully went and rabbed them out.
Okay.
Because he was like, no, I'm not fucking doing that.
Yeah.
And also, fuck you.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Time is a flat circle. We just kind of let people go, even though they wanted to destroy our, like, for the United States to just be like, wow, some people who are senators and generals in our fucking army, and they almost cooed our ass, and then be like, yeah, I guess it's whatever, is cool, I guess.
It, I've never heard of another thing happening in the United States ever since. Certainly not in recent history, where members of Congress were organizing with fascist organizations in an attempt to storm the United States Capitol and potentially prevent the turnover from one presidency to another. Never happened. Never. Never again.
Yeah.
Not that I'm defending America, but as you were saying, very flat circle.
Yeah.
Can't even see the ridges, how flat it is.
Yeah. Another interesting factoid was just the, I guess I would say, career of A. Philip Randolph. The fact that, so the way it was framed initially was interesting, was just like, oh, he's a forgotten person of like the civil rights era. I was like, oh, he's more, blah, blah, blah. Turns out, no. No, this guy was kind of an asshole. And by kind of, I mean he was an asshole. The fact that he just hated Garvey, that's how I pronounced it, I know, Garvey, and hated UNIA, and totally ratted all those folks out, and then still got...
Purposefully co-opted them.
Yeah, and then, like, he got with the senators and other folks, and they're like, oh, here's our, you know, one black person for the union. Wow, look at us!
And this also goes to show, because, like, he was able to start out doing that because the particular, like, New York branch of the UNIA let him produce his newspaper, which they ideologically were counter to, in their property because they supported all Black organizations.
Yeah.
And so it goes to show, like, you can have, like, okay, we're going to support all Black organizations, but you still then have to make critical decisions about, do we actually support all Black organizations, or are some Black organizations reactionary?
Yeah. I think when we read Hammer and Hoe, that was also still the same problem. You know, you had the NAACP coming in and be like, okay, well, we should, like, work within the system, and then you have a bunch of these, like, socialists who are like, no, like, we've been shot and beat and terrorized. We're not going to do this nice shit anymore. So, you know, that is, it's just something that Black people and Black leadership just have to fucking deal with the history of that, because there's that will always be a fucking problem until there's, I guess, figure out solving it. We're not going to solve
the revolution. Pretty much. Till the revolution.
So, and then Randolph's whole thing about calling off the March on Washington, and then, like, just being this kind of a slimy fuck this entire time. And the thing is, like, in terms of, like, during that civil rights, like, I never heard of it was good that he kind of, but I think that it's to know kind of the, try to identify people who probably exhibit the pattern or, like, action that he does, because mm-hmm. it seems like with a lot of the until later, but it always seems to be like one or two people with organizations that fuck it all up.
Yeah.
Like straight up.
Yep. Yes.
I think that's honestly the interesting factoids. The later ones about managers, everyone's becoming a manager and all this other stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. The 80, kind of the early 80s, where I was like, oh, I have two houses. And I'm like, okay, but like, that's not really majority of American. I don't know. It was yeah. a little, I was like, sure. Yeah. That was it.
So I think that particular section was just going to, like, it was highlighting how the United States could support more and more managers, more and more administrators, more and more like white, like, or like settler or Euro-American individuals who were making what was above the median wage, despite not actually like necessarily producing anything, because of how like neocolonialism essentially moved the oppressed class from being within just the United States to being an oppressed class in the United States and the rest of the developing world. And since we were extracting so much, we were then able to, much like it earlier, where it was just settlers in like the management positions and Euro-Americans were in the laboring force, they were able to be moved into whiteness and into management positions because the U.S. was extracting so much from the rest of the world. So I think it was just like exploring how that mirrored earlier like movements where like you show up as an indentured servant, and then you were able to, after a few years, move into owning your own farm or starting your own like artisan shop.
Okay.
And moving into a more of a managerial like petit bourgeoisie position.
Fair enough. Okay. I now can see. I kind of sort of got that, but like the fact that they were hired, they made more party managers than actual workers, and the workers are generally were minority, and they usually shrunk that more than, and then boomed the managerial class. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. So I guess first things first for this next question, with my thinking that this is kind of, we can compare this to, if not, then I will. Okay. I think that this book is like, you read this after a people's history.
Yes.
So you can understand, okay, there's always been the labor fight. This book is like, yeah, we had the labor fight, but you know who the casualties were? It was the black and brown people.
Yes.
It wasn't white, like, it wasn't just white people. It was also black and brown people. And how
it was in the majority.
Yeah.
Black and brown.
Yeah. Like, that's great that we had, you know, we finally got unions in the 60s, but those were compromises for self-interest of getting more money. And then black people still got fucked out of this anyway. Like, yeah.
And also, like, in the U.S. and companies, recognizing and agreeing to work with unions in the 50s and 60s and the 40s, that came with the direct result of defanging those institutions, in like bringing those organizations into the system in such a way that they were no longer a threat.
Yeah, like I want to say about 10 years ago, there was a lot of these fools about like, oh, we're, you know, like Ford made a big deal about being a union shop and like all this other shit. Bitch, like, do you think Ford would have fucking let a fucking union, like, if that motherfucker was still alive, he still have Mein Kampf books, like, in the goddamn thing, and would fire anybody who'd been, like, the whitewashing of the unionization effort, and especially with a lot of these manufacturing places, is pretty absolute at this point.
Yes. And what allows an organization like Ford to tout how they're, like, every worker in an American Ford like position is in a union is because the majority of the production is not in the United States and the majority of their sales are not in the United States. The majority of their non-U.S. workers who form the majority of their workers are non-union. I would say all. I would venture to guess that all of their non-American workers in non-American plants are not union, because the plant would rather close and reform in another country than allow it to unionize.
Yeah. But anyway, back to people in comparison.
I think you're absolutely correct that A People's History is an excellent primer for getting an understanding of the labor struggles and like getting more of a depth on the actual, like, on the ground of the labor struggles. Because Settlers talks about all of the labor struggles, but does not spend like pages on the day-to-day minutiae of those labor struggles. Very occasionally it does. Whereas People's History, like, goes into, like, oh, how Pinkertons were brought in, and strike breakers, and talking about how the Children's March, and, like, actively, like, discussing the various organizers and the organizations, like, in depth, which is also why it's a, what was it, 900 pages? Something like that?
Yeah.
And covers the same period of history, roughly. Yeah. Whereas Settlers, once you have that understanding of, like, what labor struggles were like, you then read Settlers and get an idea of, okay, so these labor struggles, like, you get a further back view of, like, okay, these labor struggles were happening, and the results of them were Black people and brown people being pushed out of industries in this particular area. After the strike has failed, the capitalists make concessions to the Euro-American class and the settler class, and they push out Black and brown workers, and then there's less labor strife in this particular location. What happened? I think they're good pairing. Once again, I just wish that Settlers was a bit more rigorous with explaining the numbers that it comes to. Or he's, like, at least having, like, an appendix where that happened. Where, yeah, if someone wants to read that, they can. But we'll bring that up with Jay when we...
We'll send them all. Yeah. All right. Next question, 4 and 5, cool. Kind of, to go on. But, so... Jay Sakai puts forth that Black and white unity in terms of what is a myth, he demonstrated that by, like, kind of towards the end of the book with that miners union.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they like to say that they were integrated, but mm-hmm. When it came down to it, as you mentioned earlier, they made concessions and the Black people get kind of pushed out because they were still in union technically. And then they're like, well, bye, because, you know, and then they moved out. And So that was one example. General unionization efforts have been to failure, not possible. This is probably gonna be a question that's gonna be answered very readily. Do we believe that is always the case? And if so, what can be proved? And another organization that also gets brought up a lot is, as we said, the Communist Party of USA, or however the fuck that is. What can that can do better, and what can other leftist orgs do better in general? And I guess these are main questions.
You want to take a stab?
Sure. I guess first things first, listen to Black and Brown. If your organization is white and your demographics don't really reflect, like, your leadership, like, if the membership is a mix of people and still your organization, like, leadership is white, that's probably not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
That's not great. I think what Jay Sakai always hits on is the self-interest part does not really help with class consciousness, which seems to be the case of the Hammer and Hoe, and when we read about Lucy Parsons, is that, you know, you ask for more wages and they're like, okay, we'll give you that or an 8-hour work week. But you need to tell these other Black people to fuck off. And they kind of do it. They readily go and do it. So, like, I mean,
we actively saw Lucy spend her entire life refusing to engage with Black struggles.
Yeah. So, like,
rejecting her from Blackness.
Yeah. So, like, you know, this is that, like, you can't just sort of abandon everybody once you kind of got what you want, because that's what they want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
They just figure, okay, I can just sort of give you what you want. Especially if you've already been a month or two, a year of striking, you're tired, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. want to get paid, you want to support your family,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of more subjective to stuff that you probably don't necessarily want, but they get sort of there. It's mm-hmm. that income that liberals do that is frustrating for everybody else, that gets that frustrates people, and it's just shown to not really work in anybody's favor, except for white people generally.
yes. Definitely works in their favor. I agree. Also, I don't think that, at least within the United States, I can't speak for other countries, but I don't think it's truly possible to have a like broad-based, radical, like socialist or communist movement in the United States right now that is actively agitating for revolution, not for reform. Like, the treats train has not ended yet.
Yeah.
And enough of the United States is in a position where they either are getting enough treats that they do not want to buck the system, or believe if they're not getting enough treats that all they need to do is properly join up with the bourgeoisie and align to their aims and will to get set treats. It's very frequently talked about how everyone, quote unquote, everyone in the United States feels that they're just a temporarily embarrassed millionaire.
Yeah.
And that one day they're going to be a part of that bourgeoisie. And there's a reason for that. The reason for that is laid out quite well in this book, is that that was a frequent behavior. Like, if you were a part of a down on their luck settler, you very easily could become a part of the bourgeoisie in just a few years. If you were a new like European immigrant to the United States, you could guarantee that you couldn't guarantee at the time. No one could like predict the future.
Yeah.
But like, as we saw, like the generation after them and the generations after them joined the petite bourgeoisie. So I think that the condition of labor in the United States is so weak and so fractured currently, and that because of our exploitation of the global South, where even if the standard of living is increasing in those locations, the exploitation is still such that the resources that we're pulling out of all of these countries is enough to continue to keep the U.S. empire in its current political formation afloat.
Yeah.
That until that train of treats stops, I do not think it is.
Yeah. It's very difficult. Like, I work in the tech sector, so that automatically gets me. You make enough money, or we make enough money, why do we join a union? And I'm like, well, let me tell you, friends, we have other people that are technically the quote unquote underclass, which is to support people who don't make as much money as us.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we be mm-hmm. advocating for them? And, well, they just need to work up to like our level. God damn it. So,
right. But like, not everyone can.
Yeah. Or not want to. I know folks who just want to be on help desk forever, because most of the time it's probably pretty fucking chill. Like, you know,
depends on your help desk.
Yeah, but, I know. Yeah. But you know,
it could be chill. It could be chill if you had the support of like a tech union.
Yeah. So
like, I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I think Sakai does mention that it is naive of us to essentially try to port over European socialism to America. Like, that makes no fucking sense. Like, just look at our fucking work culture, right? Like, just vacation time. Yeah. We're so fucking different with that, just on fucking simple shit as vacation. There's just no way to do that.
Or I hate vacation, or like productivity metrics, like what you're expected to hit, how fast you're expected to hit it.
I hate to be like, oh, we need to have a brand, but like, we need a kind of we need to have a brand of socialism that is American, because each culture actually does have their own or type of social to kind of evolve to that, instead of being like, all right, so let's look at that are 100, 150 years old, and let's just try to like lift and shift that. Like, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked.
Yes. Now, I mean, the problem then with that, though, is like, socialism in America does not necessarily dispel the, or like stop the extraction from the third world.
Yeah.
I can absolutely see a socialist America that is still exploitative of the third world.
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's going to be so many pieces that have to be kajiggered and redone that will take forever. But I think if we can just cause like 20% less harm on the world, it would do a lot.
Agreed. For sure.
I know that's I just said, wow, incremental steps is annoying, but like,
No, I get you. It's like, everyone wants a worldwide revolution now, but to get to a worldwide revolution now, you still have to take steps. There is still, like, it does not happen just because we wish it to be. We must make it be. And in making it be, we must take incremental steps. Like, as much, and that's the other problem with like people like poo-pooing over like Democrats taking incremental steps. It's like, Democrats have not taken incremental steps functionally since, I want to say, Lyndon Johnson with his like war on poverty. Since then, it has only been Republicans taking incremental steps, and that resulted in potentially the beginnings of the rollback of like all of the modern civil rights that the United States experiences. So like, there's power in incremental steps. It's the one thing that like frustrates me with like the leftist position on incrementalism is like, but it's not revolution. And I'm like, yeah, but like, we all want revolution right now, but it doesn't just happen.
Yeah. It's like after Roe v. Wade, and people are like, oh, general strike. And it's just like, guys, you can't just declare strike and then it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that goes into it. And
like, the only reason strikes succeed is because they're able to last. The only reason strikes are able to last is because people have support networks, so that if their entire office gets fired and scabs come in, you still have food, you can still pay for your housing, you can still pay all of your bills. Like, that is the purpose of unions, is being able to support people on strike with the dues that they are paying. Like, it's not just to like collect dues and then the members of the like union organizing committee to like just live off of those dues and not have to labor with you any longer. Like, those dues are essentially insurance for when you do go on strike.
Yeah. It's not just, we just got to ask more for than just.
Yes.
Like, and it's very, I think, difficult to, like, it's easy to be like, okay, money, because capitalists are like, okay, we're just, this relationship is a transactional relationship.
Yes.
Which, very simple, black and white, but asking for respect and empathy and all these other shit is very difficult to put into words, being like, kind of, some, for some people, actionable. mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah.
you know, they're like, well, you know, we already have all these antics. Like, that's nice, but like, I'm but asking.
Are they presenting discrimination? Yeah.
No. So, yeah. I don't know anything else to add, really.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think we kind of answered 4 and 5. I mean, we didn't discuss what the CPUSA in particular could do better, but I think the answer is, for any leftist organization, is target an industry, organize it, and make demands of that industry that are not just more pay or more vacation hours. I mean, you can do that. That's nice. But you also need to make that organization properly reflect its workers.
Yeah.
Like, you should be demanding, like, the wholesale firing of, like, a third of management or half of management and a complete replacement from within the organization. Like, no, you can't just bring in other friends of yours who worked on different, like, boards. The board needs to reflect the worker.
Yeah. You should be able to, like, ask for more. Yeah, just me. So.
Yep. You should be able to democratically elect your management. Like, straight up. And any member of your management, it should not be a permanent position.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant by, like, we need to have a American version of socialism. How I guess also just rethink how we do work. There's a lot of interesting things about that. Okay.
Pretty much. Right. Before we move on, though, I do want to say, actually, never mind. It would kind of dox myself a little bit.
Let's not accidentally dox ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. So towards the end of the book, Jay Sakai mentioned settler due to a lot of migrants from Mexico coming up, but they're not exactly here. Mexico is home. USA is just a place to go work. This was also this was the late 70s. So I would say things are probably definitely different in terms of that.
To an extent.
Like, I'm not saying super different, but I just things have probably changed in the past like 30 to 40 years. So
there's still a significant population of workers from Mexico who come to the United States for functionally the growing and picking seasons, and then are either try to go back to Mexico or are deported back to Mexico. It's a program that the United States actively encouraged in the 50s and the 40s. And I think the only thing that has changed now is it's so much harder to get back across the border that people end up staying when they don't, when they may want to, when they may not want to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah. So is that received?
No.
We have, I just read an article about expats in Mexico and how they're seeing how that area of just adding, it's not just white people. There's like black people there. The reason why they're black people is because of them. So it's, anyway, whole point is they're adding, you know, these places that are very English. They're like the typical hipster shit that kind of moves into a lot of gentrified areas.
Yeah. Instead of gentrifying Brooklyn, they're gentrifying Mexico.
Yeah. So like, you know, and it's like cheaper there. They're the pricing of housing is going up, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So it's not the U.S. government doing it. It is just the Americans who have the backing of the U.S. government, like implicitly have it. Yeah. And they get to just go and stay there. And if they follow the rules, then it's fine. Also, our dollar is strong. So that is also the thing of like, well, we'll bring our money here. Most places will be like, yeah, that's fine.
Yep. I don't think it's receding at all. I think that definitely goes back to the only point at which it will recede is when either we as a whole have stopped our exploitation of the third world, both internally and externally. Or I keep using the third world, but I should be using the global south, because the third world is like fucking nonsense. It's made up. Like, technically, yeah. Switzerland was a part of the third world based on like the convention of what the third world is. First world being capitalist, second world being communist, third world being like non-aligned.
Yeah.
And capitalists and communists instead being like, are you aligned with the United States or are you aligned with the US? So like,
yeah.
So that third world contained both Uganda and Switzerland. And like, one of these is not like the other. Either the US stops exploiting the global south internally, externally, which it will not do under capitalism, or the global south organizes and like has the strength necessary to collectively like stop providing resources at like bargain basement prices to the US and other global north countries, we'll probably go to war over. I don't know about going to war, but extrajudicially like drone bomb people. We will absolutely definitely with like no recompense. I don't know. I really don't know. That's it. Will settlerism recede reads to me as like, is communism possible?
Yeah.
And like, the answer is yes, but it's just a question of how.
Yeah. We had separate points 6.1 and 6.2. We both were like, oh, what if we answered yes? And then we both answered no. So that's oops.
Yeah. Well, at least we know.
Yeah. I think also, you know, settlers isn't just like just people. Our American culture definitely is export.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
So that's also a thing that is a thing. Again, we get other cultures too. Like, it's not like we're papering over as we were before. I get to use cultural. I'm actually going to do it the right fucking way. We do appropriate culture when it does make and mm-hmm. I mean this, and it's not because white people eating Chinese food or white people get to say black vernacular type shit and thus it's cultural appropriation. I'm talking about when it just becomes profitable to white Americans. That is what I mean by cultural appropriation. So mm-hmm. like, when we know, and mm-hmm. some kind of know that willingly. K-pop music for sure knows that there's now a big Western audience, and South Korea definitely has a mandate, not really a mandate, but they're very much aware, like, yeah, K-pop is our way of spreading our thing, and that is a good, and that is what we're here to do as a government organization. So
An internal example would be like Nike.
Yes.
Like, actively like courting and like designing for a black market that otherwise like probably would not have been in their demographic, like when Nike first was formed, which in turn has cascaded into an entire like sneaker economy, which is cool. Like, sneakers are cool. It's fun to have different kinds of shoes, but it is like an act of like cultural appropriation of like a company saying, hey, like, they're like, black youths are like actively interested in these kinds of sneakers. We should court that.
Yeah.
And now there is potentially hope. I think like, can look at, what was it, Nepal, where, was it Nepal or was it a different country where like there was like an uprising and rich people's homes were seized and like torched and all their stuff destroyed?
Oh, I thought you talked. We're going to talk about how Nepal told TikTokers to stop fucking to stop filming their TikTok stuff.
That is also positive. That is good.
I don't know if it was Nepal for the torching of stuff.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah, I know it was a South Pacific country.
Was when they're now it's not Indonesia. Anyway, go on with your story of one of these countries.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was basically it. Like,
oh, okay.
So this is a country where obviously, like, capitalism has, like, set in, or maybe not, like, capitalism as we would directly describe it, but, like, some form of it where there obviously was a bourgeoisie, and they got their shit destroyed. They got ran out of the country. Does it mean they're never going to be back? Probably not. It doesn't mean that this is going to be like a socialist like revolution for that country. I don't know enough. What I do know is destroying rich people's stuff is a start.
Yeah. It definitely helps. They don't have that big of a boat. If they really need to have a boat, they can still have a fucking boat. Just not that big. It fucks something.
Yes. I also think like there's been a lot of buzz about like Taylor Swift and Kylie Jenner's and Travis Scott's private jets and how often they're flying in them recently.
Yes, yeah.
And everyone's like shocked at like, oh, how much they're flying and how far they're not flying when they do fly. And it's like, you could have just driven in a car. And it calls back to How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which very directly discusses how all of these incredibly exorbitant and wasteful means of transportation and ways of existing are really only consumed by an incredibly small minority of the population. The majority of the population is not flying every year, let alone every month or every other day. And the outrage in public is a potential, it can be read as a sign of like some potential for like radicalization. Now, whether that radicalization is down like the socialist rabbit hole or if it's down the eco-fascist rabbit hole is still up for debate.
Eco-fascist, I'm sorry, I'm always going to side-eye forever. It leads a little bit too close. There's just too many people here, too. There's just too many of the wrong type of people here.
Yes. So, of course. That's always ends up to this being what their argument is.
Who knows? It is good that, you know, everything is, that shit is like tracked now, and it is kind of interesting. These like, oh, these car rides, plane rides. Like,
yeah,
damn it.
Ride 10 minutes in your car to an airport to take a 17-minute jet ride to then drive somewhere else in a car when you could have just driven that somewhere else in the car in probably the same time.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting was that Taylor Swift's like PR person like made a statement. And they're like, oh, well, it's not Taylor who's like being on the jet. We like rent out the jet, and it's like, but it's still your jet. Like, you're still, So, don't allow your friends to use your fucking jet to go to McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah, let them, like, if they want to fly in luxury, there is still this thing called first class.
Yeah.
Like, you can sit in a plane that has other people in it that are also going to that location. Does it leave when you want to leave? Probably not. Will you have to go to the airport at a time when you don't necessarily want to be at the airport? Probably. But you can still potentially live a life of privilege separate from us plebs. And like some people may argue like, oh, but there are like security issues. It's like, then don't fucking go.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to somebody's birthday party in another country.
Yeah, it's not great. Celebrity, that entire world is completely fucking alien and separate.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
All right. Question number 7, which seven, or it's not, it's kind of a question slash kind of a statement.
Who are you?
Who is Jay Sakai and the criticisms of Settlers? So first things first, I didn't realize what time period this was written in. I kind of got it towards the end. I'm like, oh, this must be around the either late or early 80s. Turns out it's early 80s. I'm like, okay. And then I was thinking, when was Huey assassinated? 89. And then I'm like, he's a Japanese writing very provocative literature. No fucking wonder. I mean, he did an interview later, like in, later on. But like, he's also been a factory worker. So the complications of that, you know, he's probably just an older guy who just doesn't really have an internet presence or doesn't care to fucking want to because of the feds and have all that shit out. And also all of the anti-Asian sentiment that are very prevalent.
But like at the same time, I don't understand how he doesn't have more of a presence like on the internet. Like functionally, like the 90s and early 2000s internet, like as much as like white supremacy and like fascists and like white ideology has always been at the forefront of the internet, I don't get how he doesn't have more of a presence online.
Yeah. Also, this I for life me cannot pronounce their name. They're in Canada. They're an anarchist publishing company. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's that, too. I don't know. I think maybe this person just doesn't really want to be found and probably just need to respect that and not bring him on, okay, he's not a presence everywhere.
Yeah. Fair. Also fair. I'm sure, I mean, just based on what his story is, he's had enough shit in his life.
Yeah.
So, also, like, who is Jay Sakai matter as a question?
Right.
Because, like, some people are like, oh, we don't know who he is. He's an off. It's like, would feds write so critically of, like, capitalism as a whole?
Yeah, like we're talking about, you know, Huey P. Newton, like the assassination of him. It was very not holy shit. Wow, not Huey P. I'm sorry, Fred Hampton. Holy fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me. Wow, I have to like now whatever. It's fine. I will get dragged on Twitter or whatever. You can
Me. How?
I know, exactly. Someone will find a way. They will make up muddy and it'll be me and then get mad at me and then I'm going to find it and be like, what the fuck? Anyway.
Damn. Dodge that bullet.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. What I meant to say, Fred Hampton. Jesus Christ. Anyway, so Fred Hampton, all I wanted to say was that when his buddy got like picked up by the FBI, it was like very obvious that there was this other outlet, the feds were like on them. They made up these weird ass weird lies and like pamphlets and were very obviously like feds. Like I don't think people really understand. They're not this like, they're not that smart.
Yeah.
There are other dudes that you think like they're in high school and you're just like, how the fuck did you graduate? Like some, and then some are like, how do you eat manage to just get through like your day-to-day life? Like they're not that smart. They just have an apparatus that is way bigger than everybody that they can use.
Yes, and they have like state institutional powers, so when they fuck up, the state's just like didn't see anything and moves on. Absolutely. Like feds, like, and you see it all the time in like videos from protests of like, I wonder where the undercover cop is. Let's just look around. Who's the motherfucker with a tactical backpack in Oakley's?
Yeah. Like it is not hard. Also after reading that CIA book, and I'm still of the opinion that there's overemphasis on someone said something I didn't like. They must be a Fed. I fucking hate it. It's stupid. I don't care if you're like, haha, I'm joking. Not a lot of people are fucking joking about that shit. It's dumb. It is just leading to distrust within our own group, and I fucking hate it.
And it honestly prevents good ideas from being actively explored.
Yeah, like, you just get to shut down people, and they're like, okay, I guess we'll just never fucking talk about this ever again. You're just gonna get mad.
Yeah. So, yeah, probably not a Fed. Are there criticisms of the book? Yes. Those probably just being back up your numbers, ensure that all of your citations are accurate. Because, like, one of the things in, like, the Don't Bother Reading It blog was that Sakai makes a quotation of Lenin that can't be sourced, or the person writing the blog was unable to source. And it's like, okay, so the issue is not so much like you have a problem with the entire argument. You're nitpicking, like, this quote is like, I can't find a source for this quote. Where did you get this quote? Or how did you determine these particular numbers? And, like, whether the math works out in those numbers the way Sakai represents them, or maybe the number's smaller, like, for anyone who studied history, not to say that, like, once again, we're not historians yet. However, anyone who has a familiarity with, like, a accurate or semi-accurate representation of American settler history and American revolutionary history, these things line up. The story that he's telling here is a coherent one. And picking at little things is not going to take the story as a whole and render it that. Anyway, I'm a mouse now.
There is also an article about his MLM, I guess, third worldist, Maoist third worldist. I don't mean to conflate that. There were some third worldist like organizations that don't really agree with him. It was just kind of some question of, like, why is Sakai working with the anarchist like publishing company? And I'm just like, I don't care. Like, that's not a good suspicion. Like, I should be.
Yeah. Also, like, there's nothing saying that anarchists aren't third worldist are unable to have, like, hold third worldist positions. Like I just don't get it. Like, if you have a problem with, like, an anarchist, like, book publishing cooperative, like, what?
Yeah, it's I just felt like some of the criticisms were, if they couldn't find anything really, then it became a lot of just like posturing about, oh, well, he says he's this, but like, he hung out with these people, so he can't be that. And it's just so what about the book arguments? Like, what the fuck? What is the argument for or against this book?
Yeah. Ugh. Absolutely. It just doesn't add up as, like, proper and significant criticism.
Yeah, like, I can I didn't fully read the one criticism that they had at the end. It was from a Black author talking about, I think, like, Black labor, stuff like that, and just the history of that. I can see where a lot of that stuff probably was not very accurate. When we read Hammer and Hoe, I'm like thinking, like, oh man, like, 2000s, like, that history is probably very scattered. Like,
at the time when Sakai's writing this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm just thinking, like, wow, it must have been very difficult to, like, really track down a lot of this history. Like, you probably had to physically go to certain places to go to, like, those communities to find history about that shit.
Yeah.
You probably still have to do that now, but it's probably
easier. But you can.
Yeah.
Or those particular, like, archives may have been digitized.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can probably find it on the internet, or you are working through university to allow to get to these articles. Like, you know, that's just something to consider. Also, like, once again, history is something that is very still evolving and, like, changing, especially, like, different perspectives as we gather more information that is, like, that we learn more about stuff in the past. So, like, will this probably look different 10, 20 years from now? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Would, and the thing that maybe an argument can be made that should a fourth edition have been released without updating some of the sources that were being used regarding Black labor movements and Black socialist movements, given the availability of that information at the time?
I think I don't think you could just a new book and then kind of not be like, okay, so let me, like, you can release the original, or like, okay, here's this, and then have your several chapters of like, okay, so like, we need to go back over this thing, like, kind of wrong, or maybe I misattributed something to someone else, or I have new data about this. You know, if I, you know, I think we all probably believe very strongly of finding the matter of things, trying to get as close as possible and don't want to do any misinformation. So I think you're going to like re-release books, different editions, you should try your hardest to like, you do find it or
correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Things or address criticisms or complaints regarding your publication. Because I'm sure the complaints regarding the like methodologies for coming to those particular statistics existed prior to the publication of the fourth edition, but it does not appear that they were addressed.
Yeah. And from the one Reddit thread he posted, it seems like some like pamphlets and other like essays that Jay Sakai wrote. So it's not like he hasn't written anything else. Like he is not like he wrote Settlers and then fucked off or anything. He has written other stuff. It's been published through this anarchist publication, and you know, probably early on it was not really you know, these pamphlets and stuff like that. I think they probably digitized them, you know. So if you were probably in leftist circles, probably on the West Coast, probably ran into Jay Sakai during that time period.
He, now the question is, like, I mean, it's not like he's like a zit where he's actively working in academia, he's doing like the talking circuit. Like, don't get me wrong, Zinn's cool, he's fine. Not here to drag Zinn necessarily, but like, obviously, because he is so private of a person, we don't necessarily know like what sort of time he would have to devote to doing that sort of thing. Like, writing a couple of pamphlets or like short papers is definitely a different thing versus like actively re-editing and providing revisions to a book you wrote 20 years ago. So it's definitely a complaint we can wage and provide, especially given we don't necessarily know his material conditions and what he is able to do, or what resources he has available to him. But it would be nice to have like a section of the book that is like regarding complaints.
Yeah.
And then just be like, I'm aware that there are complaints regarding these things. Like, here's the methodology I used at the time, or when I initially wrote this, like I used a particular methodology, but I no longer like have those papers. Like, they were lost in a fire, or I've moved a lot, or surprise, surprise, I've led a treacherous life in which people have directly attacked my home or what have you.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like many of the criticisms could be addressed without too much work, but a complete revision of the book would definitely be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm hearing in the space between what we're saying is we're going to rewrite stuff.
Yes, we're going to rewrite Settlers, and it's going to come out in, and it'll be great. After when Books R gets their master, it'll be after that.
Yes, it will be our the beginnings of our PhD thesis that we'll abandon, and then we'll pivot to, well, Books R will pivot to doing YouTube videos.
Yes.
Yes. Cool. Okay. Okay. So, question 8. Angela, did we do it?
No.
Okay. Then I am spared.
Yep.
I'd understand. I would understand. Fair. Fair. Questioners, I mean, listeners. Listeners, question number 8 was, do we kill all white people? And so now you know where Baga stands. or at least half of Baga. I don't think I get a say in it. I will agree with the committee. The committee being Angela.
Yep. White people are spared. You're welcome. Anyway, next up, we're going to talk about abolishing Silicon Valley.
And can we kill those white people?
I don't know. We have to read the.
Okay, fair.
So let's read. Yes, that's the next book. Still more labor shit. And then next episode, we'll definitely have the book for the next or so months. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Should we change our name to Labor History Books Are Good, actually? Wahabaga?
we'll I'll think about it as I'm the committee. anyway, remember, books are good. Actually.